Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter, at JoeOrrico99, and also at EthosFantasyBB. That's where we post all of our new baseball and fantasy baseball content, podcasts, articles, polls, news and notes. Every bit of content gets shared out there. That's ETHOSFantasyBB. And if you're not somebody who uses social media, please do check out sportsethos.com. You get everything there right from the source. Guys, we are going to be going over Wednesday's slate, talking about my quick hits, the things that really stood out to me from yesterday, and then we're going to be getting into the players that are being added and dropped in the most leagues today. I do think it makes sense to start out, though, with Mr. Elly De La Cruz, who is currently the number one player across pretty much every single fantasy format. I said it in a tweet last night that he's number one everywhere. Might have misspoke because there are specific points leagues where he might not be number one, but generally speaking, he is the number one player pretty much everywhere. 23 runs, 18 ribbies. He's already hit 7 homers and stolen 15 bases to go along with a .313 batting average. I got to say that I was fading Elly coming into the season, and it wasn't because of a talent thing. It was mostly because of where he's being drafted. He was going in the second round, early in the second round, in 15-teamers, and I play mostly 15-teamers on the NFBC at this point. Some 12s, mostly 15-team player. And he was going at like 20th overall, 22nd overall, that type of range. There was never really a time where it fell much. That was kind of always where you had to be, you know, paying up to get him, and I never wanted to. I wish I did in one league now at this point, just so I could say, okay, I got in on the Elly train a little bit. But the other side of this is he's on an incredibly hot streak right now, but the profile with the high strikeout rate, with the fairly high ground ball rate, he will come back down to earth. He has a .422 BABIP. That's not going to sustain, even if it's going to be a higher BABIP than usual, and it is, because he is a lot faster than most players. A lot of those ground balls, he's going to be able to beat them out a lot more than the average player. So he will run higher BABIPs, but he won't run a .422 BABIP. Last year was .336, and that led to a .225 batting average. Let's say he even goes to .350. I think you're probably, and that's generally what the projections are rest of season, about .330 to .350 range for the BABIP. They think he'll be about a .240 to .250 hitter. Now, you can say, have they adjusted properly to what we've seen from Elly so far? Maybe not. But I also think with that high strikeout rate and the high BABIP at this point, you are going to see that batting average come down. He's not going to be a .300 hitter. He's just not. You're probably looking, best case scenario, at about .260. Everything else is pretty damn secure, I think, though. The power we know is legit. That raw power is insane. He can probably be close to 30 homers. He's going to be probably in the 50 stolen base neighborhood, roughly. And the runs and RBI should be pretty solid as well. The thing that was really interesting to me was a couple people yesterday were asking me, is it the time to sell Elly De La Cruz? If I can get Bobby Witt Jr. back for him, if I can get Mookie Betts, if I can get Ronald Acuna Jr., if it's any of those three names, I would say the answer is likely yes. You know, the ceiling is not really that much higher for those guys. Those guys were the top three players last year. Bobby Witt might have been fourth, but they were three of the top five players from last season. The ceiling is incredibly high, and the floor is also a lot higher than Elly for all of them in terms of strikeout rate and batting average particularly. Mookie's stealing more bases this year, so I mean, you might say I'm going to give up some steals if I take Mookie over Elly, but he is stealing more. He's in a much better lineup. The batting average is much more secure. So I think if you're getting one of those three guys back, I wouldn't have a problem with it. I think Elly at this point in time is probably still, I mean, at this point in time, it doesn't make sense the way I'm phrasing it. I think by the end of the season, he's probably still going to end up as a top 50 or so player. But right now he's number one, and you can kind of run the table with trade offers if you have the number one overall player. You can trade him for You know, I usually don't like two for ones, but if you can trade Ellie and get back like 2 second round players for him, or a first rounder and a second rounder, or if you can really, really sell high, then I'd be doing it. If you're just doing a one for one swap, I think it would probably have to be one of those three guys I mentioned. Would probably have to be Acuña, Mookie, or Bobby Witt Jr. And if you're not getting one of those guys straight up, then I probably just wouldn't do it. I mean, again, it really depends on your league, your own preferences. Ohtani would be another one if you're getting back Ohtani straight up. Like, I'd be fine with that. Potentially Juan Soto as well, but you're giving up on the stolen bases there. There are a few players, I think, where you can make that argument that, yeah, if you're able to get him back for Ellie right now, you absolutely should. Is he improving as a baseball player? Absolutely, but he's not all of a sudden just going to be a guy who doesn't strike out anymore. Like, the strikeout rate has gotten slightly better. It's still 32%. It's still massive, massive strikeout rate. The walk rate is really high at 13.4. I don't know that that's going to stick necessarily. I think that teams are a little bit scared of him right now and maybe aren't giving him as many pitches in the zone as they generally are. He's walked 13 times already in 24 games. He only walked 35 times last year in 98 games. So I don't know that that's necessarily going to just stick now. A 13.4% walk rate is 99th percentile. I don't think that that's going to stick. He is overperforming, and regression is incoming. I don't think that that'll mean he's a bad player. I think worst case scenario, we're talking about a top 50 player here. At worst. But if you can get back a first rounder, a top five player for him, then I think you'd be kind of foolish not to at least see what the market is, because there's a chance that somebody's willing to part with Acuña. He's been picking it up recently, but a relatively slow start to the year. Some people might see the Ellie De La Cruz monstrous start and say, okay, I'll bite. It's a fun young player. I'll trade Acuña for him. Don't think it'll be a lot of people, but in some leagues you might be able to do that. And if you are trading Ellie, just make sure you're getting back like a top five player at this point, because the value is just absolutely through the roof right now. Let's talk about Reynaldo Lopez, though. Let's keep it going. He had another excellent outing. He went seven strong, struck out six batters, allowed just one earned run, two walks, 30% CSW, 22% swinging strike rate. I think we can safely say that he's made the successful conversion from reliever to starter. I still have the same concerns that I've had with him. You know, we've talked about him after pretty much all of his good starts. My concern is not really on a per-outing basis. It's a matter of how many innings we're going to get out of Lopez. He hasn't thrown more than 66 innings since 2019. And another factor here is the Braves are likely to be locked into a playoff spot somewhere in mid-September. Likely, you know, early mid-September, the Braves are going to pretty much know what's going on, right? They're not going to be fighting until the last week of the season for a wild card spot. Like, they're probably going to win that division, you know, wrap it up pretty early on. Let's be honest with ourselves here. Maybe they don't, but that's generally still my expectation at this point. You guys are going to be in head-to-head playoffs. I know a lot of you guys are head-to-head players in September. September is head-to-head time, head-to-head playoff time. Is Reynaldo Lopez, who's going to likely be on an innings limit for a team who's already likely clinched a playoff spot, going to be doing a hell of a lot for you in the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season? My guess would be not. My guess would be that Reynaldo Lopez is somebody that will at some point have maybe not a phantom IL stint, but there'll be, you know, 3-inning outings, maybe a couple 4-inning outings. They'll go and stretch him out or miss a start or go a 6-man. They'll do what they can to keep these guys healthy. The Braves are already not in a really great spot in terms of their arms and health. Strider gone, Fried, forearm stuff. He looked better the other night, but still kind of a concern. And then you got Bryce Elder, Charlie Morton. It's not exactly a robust rotation now, considering Strider's gone and there's still concerns with Fried. So I don't think they're going to take chances with Reynaldo Lopez. They don't need to. This team is going to waltz into the postseason, and they're going to want to have Lopez there throwing darts in the postseason. Is he going to throw 150, 160 innings in the regular season after having not done that in 5 years? I'd say probably not. I say you're probably getting about 110 or so innings from Lopez. Maybe 120, but even that, right? Doubling your innings from last year, I don't know if I'd expect it. Maybe you're talking about 100 innings from Lopez, and then we see a bunch of crap, like I was mentioning, with ILs and shortened starts and whatever. So I think if you can sell high, and right now, I think you can sell pretty damn high on Reynaldo Lopez. If you're looking at rankings for the season, he's about a top 40 player. He's got a 0.72 ERA. He's got a sub-1 whip. He's won a couple games, striking out a batter per inning. There's a lot of value there, and starting pitcher, relief pitcher eligibility is something that's really nice as well. So if you're able to go out there and trade Reynaldo Lopez for a top 100 player, a top 25 or 30 SP, I think it makes a lot of sense. I know this year is kind of wacky with who's safe, who's not safe, and it's kind of a misused term, but I'll use it here. If you can find somebody who is relatively kind of safe, you know, Lopez, and maybe you package up somebody else in there for like a Logan Webb type, I would do that 100 times out of 100. Lopez and some random dude, and maybe you get yourself back Logan Webb or somebody like that who is generally perceived to be a very safe asset. I would look into doing it because I think that come the last 6 weeks or so of the year, it's really going to be a headache with Lopez, and he might not even get a start in your head-to-head semifinals and finals. If it's the last week of the year, maybe he does. Maybe it's like a two-inning start, three-inning start just to keep him fresh, but I think for you head-to-head players, you're going to run into some trouble with Ronaldo Lopez come the last month or so of the season. Let's talk about Garrett Crochet because it's been a couple of rough outings in a row here for him. Last night, he threw four innings. He allowed five earned runs on seven hits, six strikeouts, and two walks. He had a 21% CSW and a 9.1% swinging strike rate. Now, I'm not really concerned here. I know that the 6.37 ERA is atrocious. It looks terrible. It has hurt your team so far. It's hurt me. I have him all over the place. I have four shares of Garrett Crochet. But you have a 2.58 expected ERA. You have a 2.90 xFIP. You have a 2.71 Sierra. And you're still looking at a 25.6 strikeout minus walk rate. That is always something that I'm going to look at very, very closely. Strikeouts and walks, it might be just boring, basic stuff, but it does tell you a lot about the talent of a pitcher and how they have been doing. Among all qualified starters, Garrett Crochet has the sixth best strikeout minus walk rate. He's striking out 32% of batters. That is fourth best in baseball, behind Freddie Peralta, Jared Jones, and Joe Ryan. We're at the point with Garrett Crochet where people are just straight up dropping him. Not even benching, not even just like, oh, we're a little bit concerned. He's fallen all the way down, dropped 14% of leagues over the last week, down to 59%. Starting pitcher, relief pitcher, eligible. This is something that I don't really understand. I do on the surface because you see that bad ERA and you're like, okay, he's hurt my team. It's been a couple, actually three bad starts in a row. I don't want to deal with him anymore. If you're seeing Garrett Crochet get dropped in your league, I would be picking him up immediately. And it's funny because with my quick hit threads, I can see like some of the tweets in the thread get a lot of likes. Some of them don't get nearly as many likes. I guess that means the ones that people don't agree with, they don't get as many likes. The one where I said you should be picking up Crochet, you should be buying low, that was the tweet in my thread last night that had the fewest likes of all of them. And that just tells me that people generally don't agree with that take as much as the other ones. I know you shouldn't read much into likes, but I mean that's generally what it tells me, right? If you're agreeing with that, you're more than likely going to, you know, hit the heart button, and that was the least liked tweet there. So I think a lot of people are more out on Garrett Crochet at this point. The advanced numbers are really good. He's only stranding 55.9% of base runners, which is the lowest mark, the lowest number among all qualified starting pitchers. He's getting screwed with the strand rate. He's getting screwed with his luck in general to this point in the season. He's allowed a 1.82 homer per nine. It's, again, not a number that I would expect to stick. That's the fifth highest number in all of baseball. You look at the strikeouts and walks. You look at the Sierras, the xFIPs, the FIPs. All of those supporting metrics are really good for Garrett Crochet. And if someone's dropping him in your league, I would be picking him up. And honestly, at this point, if someone's still holding on, you can probably get him for a song and dance routine. It's probably going to cost you very, very minimal. And again, there's, like I mentioned, the innings concerns with Lopez. I have the same kind of concerns with Crochet. I don't know that he's going to throw more than about 120 innings or so. But while he's throwing those innings, you should be rostering him. Like, Lopez is a different story because he's on all these rosters already. He's not a free agent anywhere. We're at the point where Crochet is available in almost half of Yahoo leagues. It's gotten ugly these last couple outings. I won't sugarcoat it. It's been bad, but if you are looking for some reason to be confident in him, go look at the outing against the Braves a few weeks ago and just go watch some of that film. He is very, very good, and I think that a couple of bad starts here early in his transition from a reliever to a starter should not, you know, sour us on the whole idea of Garrett Crochet. I think he's still really good, and if people are cutting bait, I would be picking him up. Let's talk about Connor Wong. He's been one of the best catchers in fantasy, and this is an early win for me and for those who followed my rankings at all in terms of drafting, because I have a lot of Connor Wong. I ranked him very aggressively in terms of catchers. Maybe not very aggressively, but fairly aggressively, and I drafted him quite a bit. He's batting 370, 5 homers, 11 ribbies with 7 runs scored. obviously he's not going to bat 370 all the time, but there are reasons to like Connor Wong that have nothing to do with, you know, this hot stretch that he's on. The reason that I was in on him to begin with was because I thought, A, he's going to play a lot. There's going to be regular playing time in a very good ballpark. And B, which was kind of the main one for me, is that I'm getting steals from my catcher. It's not going to be a lot of steals, but he had 8 last year. He had 7 the year prior in AAA. He's going to give you some. And from the catcher spot that's usually giving you 0, I'll absolutely take it. It's probably going to be 4 or 5 steals to go along with maybe 15 home runs, you know, and probably like a 250 batting average or so. That works for me. And I think at this point with Connor Wong, considering how he's being used, he is sitting today. But I think it's a day game after a night game situation, so there's not much to read into there. He's playing pretty much every day, 5 days a week for the Red Sox. And I think he's entered into the territory of, if you're even in a one-catcher league, he is somebody that you can pick up. He's not just relegated to two-catcher territory anymore. I think if he's out there, he's somebody that is worth taking on. Like, if you have Alejandro Kirk and you're sitting there hoping for him to turn around and you can switch him out for Connor Wong, I would be doing that. Andy Páez, Pages Páez. I always mix this one up because people say it all kinds of different ways. I believe it's Páez, but it looks like Pages if you just look at the name. A lot of people are still unfamiliar with him because he's just come up. He's only been in the show for about a week. But damn, he's been very impressive. He's playing well. He's actually playing every single day and playing well. 7 for 27 so far with 8 runs, 2 homers, and 4 ribbies. It's the wonders of the Dodgers lineup, right? Páez has been batting between 7th and 9th in the order. He's actually slated to bat 6th later today, which is really good, moving on up a little bit. But even from the bottom third of the order, you're talking about not even a week's worth of games, and you got 8 runs and 4 ribbies. It's really good stuff. I think at this point he's a must-roster player in all formats. Even I picked him up in my 10-teamer yesterday, just to tell you where I'm at on him, even in shallow formats. It's a 10-team, 4-outfielder league, so as long as it's anything like that, 40 or so outfielders being rostered, I think that he is worth a spot. Dodgers right there, like being in the Dodgers lineup is such a huge piece of value, not to mention the fact that he's actually raking right now. So go out there and pick him up. Is it always going to be this good? Maybe, honestly. He's not doing anything that's that crazy to me. Could he score 8 runs a week, hitting a home run or two with 4 or 5 RBI? Yeah, I think he could. In that lineup, it wouldn't shock me at all. So go ahead and pick up Andy Páez if you're still able to find him. And I think you probably are. On Yahoo, he's only at 19%. The hype has not really gotten that crazy yet. Let's talk about Willy Abreu, because the hype, we've mentioned him a few times over the last week or so, but he had another 4-hit game yesterday, and he is still available in, I think, way too many leagues. At this point, we are up to 34%. He was 2% last week, so people are really adding him up. But we're looking at this point a .332 batting average, .412 on base, and a .542 slug. That .345 slash is always beautiful to see. 11 runs, 2 homers, 9 ribbies, and 4 stolen bases. The Red Sox are playing him every single day and batting him 2nd through 4th in the order. When I put my notes out 14 hours ago on Twitter, he was 21% rostered. He is now 34% rostered. Today alone, let's see how many ads we have. I'm not sure what that equals to. 13% of Yahoo leagues is 16,500 different leagues have added Willy Abreu today. We're likely going to be closing in on the 20,000 number by the time all is said and done. It's only 1 o'clock here. The Red Sox are playing because it's an early game today, so you're not going to get that ad if you haven't got him already. But I think going forward, he should still be considered a pretty strong asset. The Red Sox are pretty banged up. Don't see him coming out of that order anytime soon, especially they're batting him 2nd through 4th. They trust him. He's producing. I think that he should be rostered pretty much everywhere at this point. Let's talk about Willy Castro. I think this is more of a deeper, like 15-team AL-only type of thing, but he's playing every day, pretty much every day. On Yahoo, he's eligible at 2nd, 3rd, short, and in the outfield. He also did hit a home run tonight. I think he makes for a nice little bench piece in deeper leagues, especially daily changes where one of your guys is sitting. You can plug in Castro because of that that eligibility. I was about to say volatility, not volatility. The eligibility all over the infield and in the outfield is so, so valuable. So I think in that 15-team AL-only context, he's there. Not sure I'd quite say he's mixed league, 12-team value kind of guy just yet, but we could maybe get there with Willy Castro. I think there's some interest here. For now, I think it's just 15-team territory, though. Let's talk Will Benson. He's been dropped a lot recently. He's down to 23% on Yahoo. But I think he has more value than he's generally given credit for. He leads off against righties already to this point of the season, 3 homers and 5 steals. That's really, really good, right? We're talking about, percentage-wise through the season. We're about 20%, less than 20% of the way. Let's call it 20% just to make it easy here. That would be a pace of 15 homers and 25 stolen bases. I think you'd take that on most of your teams, right? Not to say that that's always going to work out. It usually doesn't, just extrapolating like that. But he's done very well. He's batting only 203, but he's, you know, getting BABIP to death. He's going to probably end up in the 230 range, I would imagine. And I think this is a situation where mostly I think I'm more interested in daily changes leagues because of the fact that he might not play against lefties. Not all the time against lefties anyway. Maybe he'll be bottom of the order type of guy. But if you're just slotting him in there against righties when he's batting first, there's a lot of value there, and that's a daily change specialty. You can't really control that as much in weekly lineup leagues. But in any event, I think that he is still generally worth a roster spot. Even if you're not going to be starting him every day, I don't know that you should let this kind of production just be sitting out there, especially playing half your games in a park like Great American where the ball travels very well. I think that he is worthy of a roster spot in most cases. He's a good buy. He's a good add if you're finding him on waiver wires. Dean Kramer had his best outing of the year against the Angels yesterday. It was 5 1/3. He allowed 2 earned runs, 3 hits, 10 strikeouts, and 1 walk. It was a 36% CSW and a 17.8% swinging strike rate. He does worry me, though. There is massive blow potential on any given night. He took advantage of a not great team, not great offense. I know Trout's great. Taylor Ward's great. The team as a whole is not. So he took advantage of a fairly, you know, mediocre lineup. And I don't know that we should read anything more into it than he had a good night. I think that he's a streamer on, you know, in given the right matchup, the right ballpark situations. But I don't know that he's somebody that I'm running out and adding because he had a 10 strikeout game. There's a lot of players, a lot of pitchers where they strike out 10 batters. You're pretty much going and adding them right away. But it's good to see that there's actually more drops than adds for Dean Kramer today. People are kind of, you know, getting smart to the fact that it's just a good outing. You're looking at the previous few outings, 3 strikeouts. He had 6 against Pittsburgh in 7 innings, but not overpowering from that standpoint. You know, the ERA, the whip numbers are not generally going to be that great. So he's more of a streamer. Dean Kramer is definitely more in the streaming territory. He's 19% rostered on Yahoo. That feels generally about right. Let's talk about the most added and dropped players today. Now, Willy Abreu, number 1 with a bullet by far. The number 2 most added player is Simeon Woods Richardson. He's playing against the White Sox. This one has already started. It's an early day of games, or early slate today. That one started at 1 p.m. He's already thrown an inning with 2 strikeouts. The White Sox are just like, you stream pretty much anybody against them at this point. It's like a supreme stream. I don't even know how to describe it well enough. They have 3 wins through the first month of the season. They're hot garbage. If I was pitching against them, I feel like I'd be able to throw a quality start. They're absolute dog shit. You stream any and everybody, and including Simeon Woods Richardson, who's not had a long track record. He started not many games in the big leagues. Doesn't matter. Anybody can get through the White Sox right now. They're garbage. Mark Canha, I've talked about Mark Canha a lot this year. Been a huge fan of what he's done, specifically in OBP formats, but even in just standard 5x5, we're up to a .259 batting average. 5 homers, 14 ribbies, he's got 12 runs. He's even got a stolen base, and he's batting usually. It does bounce around in that order, but generally speaking, he's like the number 2 hole hitter. Sometimes he's third, sometimes he leads off. He's been down at 4. He's kind of all over the place, but it's always in the top half of the Tigers' order. First base, outfield eligible guy. He's been carrying a couple of my teams this year, which is crazy to think about Mark Canha, but he is somebody that should be picked up if you're still seeing him out there. Mitchell Parker, again, still being added up. We're up to 33% now. He'll get the Marlins this weekend, and I think he will be one of the better available streamers. So if you're still seeing him out there, we've talked ad nauseum about him this week, so I won't get into him again. But if you are still seeing Mitchell Parker out there, I think he's a really, really good stream for you. Andy Paez still being added. Travis d'Arnaud, Connor Wong, a lot of the guys that we have already talked about. An interesting one here is Nestor Cortes, because there were some leagues after the first couple of bad starts of the year where Nestor Cortes had not been doing great, and he got dropped. He's picked up the pace very much so over these last 3 outings, specifically against Tampa this most recent time out, and then a couple starts before that against Miami where he went 8 shutout innings. You're not going to find him in most leagues. He's already 85% rostered. But he faces Oakland tonight. So even if you're in a very, very shallow league, 6 teams, 8 teams, 10 teams, if Nestor Cortes is out there, just based on the matchup alone, he's absolutely somebody that you should be putting on your team. That is a really, really excellent opportunity there. Last one I'll mention in terms of ads is Dalton Varsho. He just continues to do it every single night. He's all the way up to 75%, but if you are still seeing him out there, we've talked about him a lot. Go and get him. He's fantastic. Let's talk about the drops. Garrett Crochet, number one with a bullet. I'm just not even close to being there yet with him. This one's really weird for me, this next one. It's Clark Schmidt. He had not an amazing outing against the A's yesterday. He still got the victory, 3 runs on 4 hits with 2 walks and 5 1/3. People are dropping him. More than 4,000 leagues today have dropped him. He's been very good this year, 3.55 ERA. The whip is a little higher than I'd like it at 1.46, but he's been very solid. Strikeouts are good, good team context. I wouldn't be dropping Clark Schmidt unless you really have a good reason to. You're in a massive roster crunch, or I can't even really think of a good reason at this point, honestly. He should be rostered, 39%, and it's going down. I don't understand that, really. He's being added 1,400 times today, but dropped 4,100 times. So he's out there. If you're able to find him, I would be picking him up. Alec Marsh, he's been dropped a lot. He was placed on the IL today with a right elbow contusion. He's off to a pretty good start for the year, 2.70 ERA, 1.01 whip. Not somebody I'd be holding through any kind of elbow problems. Really, at this point, there's not many players I'd be holding through elbow problems. Marsh is not coming from a point of being so good where I feel like I would need to hold on for that. So I think in most cases, you're pretty okay to drop him. If you want to put him on the IL, if you have the free space, for sure. But I think you can drop him and be pretty all right with it as well. Yariel Rodriguez, he had his first bad outing. He hasn't had that many outings yet, but he got roughed up a little bit by Kansas City. 3 runs on 6 hits with a couple walks over 4 innings and only 2 strikeouts after the previous couple outings having 7 and 6. It's not great stuff. I'm really concerned with the Blue Jays management and how they're evaluating players because I think they don't have a damn clue what they're doing. Alek Manoah has looked like dog shit at AAA. I don't think Alek Manoah is a major league pitcher at this point, and yet it seems like Alek Manoah will be the guy who, in the next week or two, eventually comes up and takes the rotation spot. I don't think it's going to last because I don't think Manoah is very good anymore, and I was one of his biggest fans about a year ago, so it's devastating to even talk about him like this, but I think Manoah sucks. He got the yips. He's no longer a major league caliber pitcher. Maybe he will be again at some point. As of today, I don't think he is. I think Rodriguez is much more suited for that rotation spot. Toronto may end up going back to Rodriguez, and I think they probably will. Bowden Francis today, who has been kind of the guy who comes in behind Rodriguez as more of a depth guy, they put him on the injured list today with a forearm strain himself. So Toronto's kind of lacking these depth options. Maybe Manoah is able to surprise all of us. I would expect that Rodriguez does stay in the rotation, or at least in a role where he is throwing 4 innings at a time at least, and then I think there's still some fantasy value there if you are getting bulk out of him. It doesn't need to necessarily be in a starting role, but even if you're getting 4 innings in relief consistently, I think there is still some pretty good value there. Jack Flaherty is the last guy we'll talk about in terms of drops. I think, again, it's kind of premature. 4 runs on 7 hits over 5 innings. He struck out 6. I've gone from being a Jack Flaherty, like, full-blown hater to actually now defending him this season, which does feel very weird. But his 4.91 ERA is backed up with a 3.55 xERA, a 2.68 xFIP, and a 2.65 Sierra. He's got a 25.8 strikeout minus walk rate. His walks are incredible, only 3.2% walk rate. Through his first 29 1/3 innings, he's walked 4 batters and struck out 36. I think it'd be premature to get rid of Jack Flaherty. I understand being a little bit frustrated with him, but I don't think he should be below 50%, and that's where we currently stand. He's at 48% on Yahoo. If he's out there, I think that he is a pretty solid streamer, or not even just a streamer. I think that he's somebody you can roster, but even just as a streamer for next week against the Cardinals, who are not really firing on all cylinders, I think you can buy in there and get a little bit of a revenge game narrative as well. So I like Jack Flaherty. I don't think he should be sitting on waiver wires. I would go pick him up if you can. But that will do it, guys. I appreciate everybody coming along for the show. If you haven't already done so, subscribe, leave a rating and review, and do all that fun stuff. And go over to check us out on Twitter, at JoeOrico99 and at EthosFantasyBB. Guys, we'll be back again tomorrow to wrap up the week. But until then, take care. Have a great night.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.